Bienvenue! Welcome, hello, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Ewan Spence back in the chair here for the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. And hopefully at the other end of this voting circuit, we have the scores from the Rafe jury.
We do indeed. Shouldn't you have been saying welcome in either Danish or Swedish, Ewan?
Well, no, because the official languages are either British or French.
Fair enough. Okay, in case you don't know, Ewan's been at Eurovision for the last, 3-4 weeks, haven't you, Ewan?
It feels like forever.
So was it worthwhile? Did you enjoy yourself? And more importantly, have you got anything related to Windows Phone that you can put into this podcast?
It was worthwhile. It's wonderful seeing the songs that you don't like lose horribly. There is a certain amount of pleasure in that. And no, I've just got some Android stuff to talk about, if that's okay.
You do realise this is all about Windows Phone. I know you've been gone a while, but not that big a change.
It's not. Well, this is the interesting thing. The Nokia Lumia 820 sat in my right-hand pocket for most of the trip because it's got the British SIM in it and the number, and that's what all the PRs have. In my left-hand pocket, I had an Android phone, the Sony Xperia specifically, mostly because I needed to put the SIM in to get local data and everything, because it's far, far cheaper than roaming, and I would essentially use that as a hotspot for all my other devices. Something like 5 gig of data for 30 kroner, which is about £30 all told with all the calls. But it did mean that I got a chance to have a look at Android while I was away doing the same sort of things that I would normally do with Windows Phone. And you know what, Rafe? Both devices are about the same.
Right.
In terms of what they can do, functionality-wise, you know, there's not a lot between them. How they do things is slightly differently. Obviously, there are differences in applications, but I know for a long time people kind of poo-pooed Windows Phone as being this Fisher-Price thing. Well, I've news for everybody. Windows Phone 8, the new updates and everything coming through, as far as I'm concerned, they are on a par with Android devices. Yes, there are some strengths and weaknesses on each side, but all told, if you were to drop me anywhere in the world and hand me one of the three leading phones, either iOS or Android or Windows Phone, I'd be 95% capable with all of them. And in all the sort of heated fury between different platforms, I think that's important to recognise.
It's an interesting comment. I mean, there's obviously still these smartphone wars going on, and I don't think that's going to go away. And indeed, you know, we are into the battle of ecosystems that Stephen Elop and the Nokia team are always so keen to talk about. And we've had some more examples of that this week, actually, with Microsoft and YouTube, which we'll get onto later. But as far as consumers are concerned, I don't think there's ever been a better time to buy a smartphone, because there's competitive devices right across the spectrum. You know, at the top end, you've got the iPhone devices, you've got the Samsung Galaxy S4, the HTC One, something like the Nokia Lumia 920. And I think all three of those, and maybe you want to add in the BlackBerry, the Z10 and the Q10 to that list as well, you know, they're £500 plus devices, or maybe a little bit less depending on where you're buying them. They're all very capable. Now, I would still say that each, as you say, has their own strength. Android in particular, I think, is good for those who like to maybe fiddle with their devices or want more customization. But I'm not sure, you know, the typical user necessarily falls into that group. And so when they're recommended an Android phone on that basis, it may not be the right thing. I mean, there are other reasons to recommend Android device as well, like the close tie-in with the Google services, for example. But, you know, sometimes I hear people go, oh, you should get an Android device because it's more powerful. Well, I think that can sometimes be true, and certainly they often have the highest end specs. But does that always suit the person who's buying the device? And I've said to many people, I think Windows Phone is in some ways a more accessible device, that Metro UI, modern UI, or that the new look and feel that you're getting all across Windows seems to me something that's easier to pick up than some of the intricacies of Android. And it's also about the amount of stuff that's displayed on the screen. But I think what's the point really is you can make an argument for any one of them, and a lot of the functions are in all of those devices. Now, we'll still talk about the app gap, and no doubt we'll talk about that in future podcasts as well, and I think that's still there, but it is different to a year ago when Windows Phone 7.5 perhaps felt like it was falling a little bit behind, or, you know, it wasn't mature yet. And particularly, we've got more updates to Windows Phone coming. We've written about these on the site a bit now. Lumia Amber is the Nokia update. That's actually running on top of the next Windows Phone update, GDR2, with GDR3 to come later in the year. We've already had GDR1. That was the kind of update that happened at the beginning of this year, also known as Port-A-Go or PR1.1, depending on which bit of terminology you follow. So that's a good progress, but it's interesting to hear you say that, Ewan, because obviously you've used a lot of different phones out in the wild. Now, the devices you were using would probably be best described as towards the high end.
Indeed, yes. And just to put a hand on heart, I have got a hold of a Samsung Galaxy S4 for a small trial as well. And wow, there are so many settings on that thing, three different tab panels. But yes, they are the higher end of the Android devices.
So the question then becomes, you know, is Windows Phone going to be able to compete with Android a bit lower down? Now, if you're talking right at the bottom end, the answer is no, because the devices don't go that cheap yet. You know, you can pick up an Android device for certainly £50 and sometimes even less, whereas the cheapest Windows Phone device is coming in around the £100 mark, and that's something like the Huawei Ascend W1, also the Nokia Lumia 520. But there's also the 620 and the 720 sitting in the middle. But I think at that price point, Windows Phone is almost more competitive than it is at the high end. And that's partly because the consumers, you know, it's not that they don't care about the features, but they're not as interested in doing everything possible with their smartphone and loads of customization. You know, it's about, again, how accessible is the device to them. But also, I think some of the experiences that you get on Windows Phone, they don't really change as you go down into those lower cost devices. Where Android, I mean, rightly or wrongly, because it does depend on the device you're using, has a reputation of being a bit, you know, slow, a bit laggy when you get onto the less powerful devices. And certainly some of the feature sets will drop away. And you can see this both on the Samsung Galaxy range, to a certain extent on HTC, and even Sony's Xperia range as well. I'm not sure that's had all that much impact on the market yet, because I don't think people know about it, and Windows Phone only relatively recently has got down to some of those price points in terms of multiple devices. You know, we had the 610, but the 620, the 520 and 720 kind of breaking new ground. Have you had a chance to compare one of those lower end Android devices against something like the 620, Ewan?
Not directly, although one of the team members from my Eurovision Insight team, and no coincidence there in the name, by the way, actually I had to buy a new brand new handset. She picked up one of the sort of Samsungs at about the £120 mark. It was bright orange and it was waterproof and it was running Android 2.3. And it did everything that she needed to do. It ran WhatsApp, it picked up web, it picked up email, it allowed us to keep an eye with the WordPress client. So, okay, it wouldn't do the really complicated stuff, but there again, the 620 isn't able to run some of the more complicated stuff in the games that you get under Windows Phone when you've got the higher end as well. But again, Samsung have that economy of scale that they can bring to employees. So I always get the feeling that those lower-end handsets are partly supported by the higher-end Galaxy as well, just to make sure that they have something at every single price point. I do think, looking at this, though, that 2013 and especially going into 2014... it's going to be more about marketing than specifications. I mean, they've got roughly the same CPUs, roughly the same memory. And I think it is actually now going to come down to a more style thing, to the point where I think Nokia will have an advantage with something like the 620 because it can come in a different color. You can get a green one or a blue one or a yellow one or a SpongeBob SquarePants clip-on case for your 520. I actually think that's going to be more important in terms of winning the lower-end market than the difference of £5 and the price point coming through, because we're at that inflection point where if you pick up a handset that is, quote, a smartphone, anywhere in the price range, you will be able to do most of what you want to do with it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, certainly design and some of the more, not exactly nebulous concepts, but, you know, people who are used to buying high-end phones do look at features quite closely. And saying specifications is dead is an exaggeration, but certainly the reason people buy a particular smartphone isn't constant all the way across the market. And sometimes I think it's important to bear that in mind when looking at the lower end, where actually cost is by far and away, you know, the biggest factor. And then, as you say, color and other elements come into play. I will say, having, you know, compared some of the devices myself, and I'm talking about, you know, there's a whole load of £100 or so Android devices. You put those up against the 520, it is noticeable that the Windows Phone experience, you know, feels a bit slicker. And you were saying, you and there, that there's some apps that don't run on the lower specification devices. That's 1 gigabyte of RAM versus 5 megabytes. That's starting to come up a few times. I've noticed a few apps come through in the last week for which that applies to. but it is a relatively small number. I think the cynics might say they're relatively small numbers of Windows Phone apps, full stop. But I think the problem is probably less acute on Windows Phone than it is elsewhere. And perhaps more importantly, it's actually the core operating system where you notice kind of the lack of lag on Windows Phone compared to the Android devices. I think you can overplay that too much and ultimately anyone gets used to what their phone does. But it's sort of a kind of something that gets hung around the lower end Android devices, perhaps unfairly, but it does seem to be sticking a little bit. And of course, there's also this, you know, the fragmentation issue that gets talked about. There are a lot of some of the older versions of Android running on these devices with some very noteworthy exceptions. As I say, you can't really generalize about all low-cost Android devices simply because there's so many and some are running more recent versions. But maybe you, next time you go away, we'll get you doing a comparison on the lower end and see what your conclusion is from that.
You always said to be away with the lower handsets. The second I get away to do something myself, I get all the experience coin. You're going to South by Southwest. Here's a $50 phone. See what you... I never get the high-end stuff.
Well, talking
mostly
of high-end...
because they're camera-based.
talking of high-end, while you were gone, and, you know, this is the reason...
What did I miss?
You missed the Lumia 925 launch, and the Lumia 928 was also being launched. Now, I know you've had a chance to look over these. Is there anything from your perspective that stands out immediately from either device?
Yes, there is. The fact that Steve's not going to let me review it until he rips the camera to shreds.
I think that's fair to say. We talked about this on the last podcast and perhaps suggesting that the Xenon flash wasn't all it added up to be. And there's been some sample shots that have come out from some of the first people to own the Lumia 928s now on sale in the States, exclusive to Verizon, $99 plus the usual two-year contract. That does kind of bear that out. I also suspect there's a little bit more tuning that could go in on the software there. It's a trouble when you have a handset that's exclusive to your network. I think inevitably less man hours are going to be put into fine-tuning camera performance than on something like the Lumia 925, which is a global device. But we've also had some sample shots from the 925 suggesting that it's excellent in low light conditions. Not really any surprise there, but there is some improvements coming from the 920. Now, that's as a result mainly of software processing rather than anything else. The extra lens that's in the 925 shouldn't make that much difference in low light conditions. Maybe getting rid of some fringing and some chromatic aberrations. But, you know, in terms of, you know, this is a mid-term update. It's not really on the full year cycle that we typically see. You know, well, that'll be in the autumn or the fall for our US listeners. Is it enough of an upgrade compared to what went before?
I think the big thing here is the word Verizon. The amount of people that when they saw the 920 come out in the US and said, it's a lovely phone, but we're not going through the AT&T network. It's perceived as a weaker network, and they were all going, oh, we want it on Verizon. So I think the first thing to acknowledge is Nokia now have a high-end device of some description on AT&T, on T-Mobile USA. On Verizon, they've got the big three now. And Rafe, you can go back in history, but it's been a long time, even if we include the Symbian devices, where Nokia have had anything approaching flagship status on the three main US networks. So at those points, it would have been Sprint, so it would have been four networks. So I think the first thing to acknowledge is now that they have a choice over the whole networks, the US system, as we've said countless times from the podcast, is very much network-led. So I'm good to see that. It delivers what people have been asking for. It delivers a slightly more stylish phone that's more in tune with sort of, you know, when you look at things like the Sony Xperia, when you look at the Samsung Galaxy S4, you know, the styling cues, the thinness, the look, the 92X series, let's call them that, actually does get a little bit closer than the 920, which Nokia got the lovely soap dish beveled pillow look on that one. So I think all in all, as a midterm upgrade, it's great because it's not actually an upgrade. It's filling it in so it's available in every single high street store as well. And also, the turnaround cycles in stores now for smartphones, you know, 6 months is almost a full cycle nowadays. The 920 is yesterday's chip wrapper in terms of smartphones. So to have the 925 come in at this point through the summer months to what I assume will be some sort of announcement in July, August for September, October availability on the next flagship camera phone. It's sensible. You need to keep yourself afresh in the shops. You need to have the posters in the window that will last for a week or two going, brand new handset, buy it here. Otherwise, you just simply lose your sales. The momentum has to be kept up. And that, I think, is the other main takeaway here. Nokia are keeping up that momentum of product releases. We're seeing something new from them every single month or so. And every time they release phone X, they can say, and we also have phone A, B, C, D in the background as well. We'll see an uptick in sales of the 520s and the 620s on the strength of the 925 coming through. So again, it's about building momentum, staying in the public eye, and that gives people confidence. You know, in 6 months' time, somebody walking into a shop might walk in for a mythical 825, for example, but they will have seen all the press releases on the 925, the 620s, and the 520s before that, and they will consciously think, Nokia's in this for keeps. They're consistent. I'm consistently reading about new Windows Phone from them. This is a Windows Phone from Nokia in front of me, though. Well, there's an HTC there as well, but I've not heard of them since before Christmas.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We've been mixing 925 and 928, and I'm not quite sure how we're meant to pronounce them. Should it be the 925 or the 928? But answers on a postcard, please. But I think your point there about the 928, which I think for a lot of people isn't interesting because it's only available in the US, about completing that operator lineup is a good one. I mean, Sprint is, of course, still around, but there are suggestions that there's going to be some Windows Phone devices on Sprint later this year, quite possibly from HTC and Samsung rather than Nokia, but worth watching that space. And T-Mobile is going to be getting the 925, of course, but it's worth remembering that the 822, which was the kind of exclusive variant of the 820 for Verizon, has actually been one of the best-selling Windows Phone devices in the States. That partly reflects Verizon being the biggest operator, but perhaps also some latent demand. So it'll be interesting to see how the 928 does. And they have priced it pretty competitively. It's undercutting some of its rivals by about $100 or so, which I think is an important but underestimated point. And you're right, Ewan, if you're talking about the 925, you know, that six-month cycle, or that need to keep refreshing devices, which is something Nokia have referred to when I spoke to their spokespeople. They said, we want to keep a constant drumbeat of devices coming. You know, that's going to be important. And I wonder, you know, whether that's a pattern we'll see more of in the future. I mean, you know, you're right, Nokia used to produce a lot of devices, and it tended to be, again, around one flagship every year or so, but then various variants around it. And there's, of course, some possibilities there. The other part of me says, you know, I'd rather have a concentration on a single handset and make that as good as you can. But in a sense, I mean, the 920 and the 925, they're going to be in the high street shops at the same time, by the way. But I'd honestly say the 925 feels to me more like a evolution, and the 928 is actually somewhere in between the two in terms of development timescales. So be interesting to see how this plays out, and of course there may be more devices to come. I guess we should talk about some of the rumours around those, Ewan.
Oh, which rumours would those be? The rumoured July 9th date, for example?
Well, I'm not sure that July 9th date is necessarily right, but you have got in the show notes here, you know, talking about EOS hints. Now, this is
a new camera from Canon.
Indeed.
But that's my big thing takeaway from all this, is EOS has been used by Canon's low-end SLRs for a stupid amount of time. Okay, and yes, it's still rumored and the device could be renamed, but I just wonder what Nokia are doing that they've not let this rumor go away. You know, EOS is a Canon trademark, and I wonder if there's... if that's hiding something in plain sight.
I doubt it. I mean, I'm not even necessarily sure that this is the correct code name. And anyway, internal
code... Let's call it Jess.
Internal code names are one thing, but actually when it comes to labelling the product, I'm sure they'll stick with the Lumia and the PureView brands. But this is actually a reference to, you know, a high-end camera phone device. And I don't think there's any real surprise that this is on the way. You know, when Nokia announced the Nokia 828 PureView, which was the 41 megapixel camera, and actually it wasn't really about the loads of megapixels, it was then down, not it, it was combining those many megapixels into one, so actually it would output at 5 megapixels, but it was undoubtedly the best camera phone on the market. It remains that today, but you know, a lot of comments around it running Symbian rather than Windows Phone. The reality was Nokia couldn't put it onto Windows Phone because the sort of hardware base, the hardware family of Windows Phone didn't support it. There's just too many megapixels, too much image processing going on. Nokia obviously would have had a chance to work on that. I suspect we may see it as kind of the first device on the next generation of Nokia's Windows Phone hardware family, because the 928 and the 925, not really surprisingly, are based on exactly the same hardware family as the 920 and the 820 and all of those variants. So there's been lots of information around this, but without anything really concrete. Do we expect it to happen? Yes. The timeline on it, I would tend to think it's going to be later in the summer or even in the autumn if it's going to happen this year. But there, you know, there's a lot of work still to go into that. And so, you know, what would you have? You'd probably have the best camera phone around would be running on Windows Phone. And there's some talk of a custom camera application, Nokia Pro Camera, which would allow some extra adjustments of settings. I think that's something that's going to be required if you put a really impressive camera module into a Windows Phone device, simply because, you know, the built-in camera app, while it's fine, it doesn't really have a lot of, you know, flexibility. The options are relatively limited. But it's interesting to see that in this forthcoming GDR2 update that I referred to earlier, one of the options is going to be to change the applications that started when you press the camera button. And I wonder if that's just something that Nokia asked Microsoft to put in at this stage, ready for a device that's, you know, going to arrive down the road just a little bit later on. So I'm afraid we haven't really got anything concrete to talk about on that. I mean, we don't usually talk about rumors, but this one's been so prevalent and we've had lots of people asking about it that we thought we'd just mention it on the podcast. So our conclusion is really, yes, there's probably something on the way, but you're probably going to have a little more patience than many people are expecting before this one turns up in an official announcement.
Indeed, yes. Try the night. There we go. Look, we do talk about rumours sometimes. What about all these games from Xbox? We actually had 8 Xbox titles, if we want to cut fine hairs this week, Rafe.
Well, it's not quite 8. It's 4, really, coming out of an exclusivity period, and the rest you can't download if you don't have a Nokia device.
But and 4 plus really 4 matter? Is... And 4 plus 4 is how many?
8.
8. Yeah,
but they're not all new, but kind of an interesting double-edged sword here. We're having having these Xbox titles come out of their exclusivity period. Which ones were they, Ewan?
So the ones that are coming out of exclusivity are Spy Mouse, Trivial Pursuit, Parking Mania, and The Game of Life.
And your pick from those is?
Probably Spy Mouse, I think. Although the Trivial Pursuit's an interesting one because the demo mode doesn't have the Pursuit game. There's two modes. There's the classic board game, and then there's almost trivia arcade puzzle mode that's only available if you actually register and buy the game in full. That bit that you buy, that's the best bit of Trivial Pursuit in terms of on the handset action, but it's not visible unless you buy it. A little bit of a mistake there from the developers. So all in all, Spy Mouse should be my pick from that. It's sort of like Flight Control, but rather than the guy playing runaways, you move a mouse to cheese, and then you move the cheese back to the mouse hole, and you have to avoid the cats that are lurking around the house. Very inventive, very nice looking, and very addictive as well in that one. Parking Mania is relatively nice. It's a puzzle game where you pretend to be a steering wheel on a car and you try and park it. It's much more exciting than it sounds. And Game of Life, I believe that's the contractual obligation board game conversion.
There we go. Yes, I mean, all of those are now out of their exclusivity period, having been only available on the Lumia devices for about 6 months. This is all part of the deal that Nokia signed with EA for loads of games, and actually extends onto their Series 40 devices as well as Windows Phone. But we certainly heard a few complaints for people who didn't have Nokia devices, but you've now got access to those. But I suspect the ones that will be catching a little bit more interest are the new titles, Ewan.
Indeed, yes. Tiger Woods 12, bum, 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 Mass Effect, Infiltrator, NBA Jam, and Real Racing 2.
And your pick from those is?
Oh, it would be Real Racing 2 on that one. I know if Steve was here, he'd be going for Tiger Woods 12, because he's played since it was then PGSA Golf Tour back in the 90s and even the 80s, back in the old Commodore 64. But for me, Real Racing 2. We've had a number of driving games come out on Xbox Live. None of them have been fully simulator games like Gran Turismo, for example, that you would get on the PlayStation range and stuff. Real Racing 2 is as close as we're going to get, although it still feels relatively arcadey. You can get a bit of drift, you can get the car into skids, but you're traveling down a track and you just decide where you are on the track rather than having full 360-degree control of your car. You can't turn around and go the other way without really, really trying to do that. A good driving game should be able to smack the handbrake on it. Oh, you're pointing in the wrong direction. Not here. But nevertheless, this is a big franchise name title again, coming to Windows Phone. It's got a huge career mode in here. It is $3.99. It is a purchase download, which I actually prefer. Real Racing 3 has just come out, certainly on iOS platform, and it's completely freemium, which is free to download, but you have to buy tokens if you want to speed up the gameplay, if you want to increase your car rather than wait the 90 minutes. So I much prefer the way that Real Racing 2 does it. You buy, you play the career mode, nothing else gets in the way. The in-game currency is just that for doing stuff and buying stuff in the game. Not having any issues in terms of graphics slowdown, having played through a couple of races. There is one very interesting bug, though, which I'm wondering why it wasn't caught. The game is played in landscape mode, but you can only play it in landscape mode if you put the soft keys on the left-hand side of the screen. Because then if you steer to the left by tilting your phone, you'll steer to the left. If your phone's flipped through 180 degrees and the screen flips over, it flips over the controls as well. So turning your phone anti-clockwise, you'd normally expect to steer to the left. You actually end up steering to the right. It's like a clown car. So you have to flip the handset around to put the soft keys on the left. And, you know, for the life of me, I've been playing my games by flipping things around to the right so I leave the speaker exposed, because I hold in my left hand and I control with the right. So that's an interesting one, and I would expect that to get picked up in short order and a bug fix update to be released. But it doesn't stop the problems of the game. Just flip the handset over to its right way, slap on a pair of headphones to get the big sound of the V6 and the V8 engines rattling around your head. And if I was you, I'd turn off the in-game music and start playing Fleetwood Max The Chain in the background itself for that genuine British racing experience.
Thank you, Ewan. Yes, I think Real Racing's an interesting one, because this is actually a result of EA's acquisition of Firemint, which I think was back in December 2011. I also did Flight Control, so it's kind of an example of the way EA has acquired some gaming titles, some inspiration through third parties. And obviously, this, as you sort of suggest, there isn't actually the most up-to-date version of Real Racing, but I think it's one of the more high-profile games to arrive on Windows Phone recently. But there's a couple of other interesting ones amongst this gap. You mentioned Tiger Woods 12. Always good to see an update. I think, you know, that kind of sports simulator type game is popular with a certain type of consumer. Steve is one of them. Yeah, there we go. And then there's Mass Effect Infiltrator, effectively a third-party shooter, tying in with, of course, the kind of the console games, the trilogy of the same name. And actually, from the quick look I had at it, it did seem very faithful to that trilogy, which isn't something you always see with these kind of companion smartphone games. Again, it's one that's been available on iOS and Android for a while. I think a good example of the way Windows Phone 8 is seeing these game ports happen, you know, when they just weren't really going to happen before on Windows Phone 7.5. There's also NBA Jam, which I think has a bit of retro nostalgia in it. It's actually based off an arcade game. I'm not sure exactly when. It's from 1993, something like that. It's not exactly graphically rich and intensive like the other games, but there's a certain amount of charm to the over-the-top commentary, and it's surprising how much of the commentary has actually entered the kind of common lexicon of basketball and the commentary. And also kind of it's got digitized versions of some of the NBA players with kind of big bobble heads. So, you know, it's more of the casual game, whereas I think some of the others you have to pick up and play for a serious amount of time to get the most out of them. But again, these are all exclusive to Nokia Lumia, and because of their deal with EA, I think it will annoy some non-Lumia owners. But the fact that Nokia is effectively, I suspect, paying a bit of a subsidy to get these games on and, you know, give it some extra bragging rights. And at the end of the day, the majority of Windows Phone devices being sold, 80% or so, are Nokia. So I can't get too excited about these exclusivity periods, and they do happen elsewhere. One of the more notable ones recently was ITV Player, which is an on-demand TV service here in the UK. It's only going to be available on Samsung Android devices, and I can understand people getting more upset about something like that, where you're in an ecosystem that's maybe, you know, not dominated like Windows Phone is dominated by Nokia.
Indeed, yes. Rafe, 1993 was the first NBA Jam arcade game released by Midway.
Ah, there we go. I'm impressed with a bit of memory recall there. Thank you very much, Ewan.
Indeed, yeah. I just powered up the main cabinet behind me to have a check on the date and the publisher as we go through there. Certainly very strong titles. Yes, they are slightly further back. But again, hopefully, my big hope here is that there are enough sales here that Real Racing 3 will be ported in short order. So the time that Real Racing 4 does come out, there is enough respect for the Windows Phone platform that it's a sequential release with Android and iOS at the same time. And of course, now we have engines being ported over, Unity, Havoc, all of that stuff. It makes it a lot easier. Rafe, can I just do a quick aside about Unity? It's only for iOS and Android at the moment, but this week, Unity made the mobile tools free for developers. Previously, they cost $800.
That's right. Actually, what's been made free is the ability to turn your game into a game that can then be uploaded to the respective marketplaces. You can always create it for free. That got announced, I think, about a year ago. But what you can now do is basically press a button and it will generate your install file or your package. And if you've got revenue under, I think it's $75,000 a year, you can do that for free. Otherwise, you need to go up to the pro licenses. And as you say, it's coming shortly for Windows Phone. There's already quite a few beta testers using the Unity engine on Windows Phone. There's been a number of games, including actually one of the games that's available in the Windows Phone store this week as part of the Red Stripe deals, Drift Championship 2, that was one of them. And there's more on the way. And I understand there's actually going to be a whole raft of Unity games, or Unity powered games, I should say, coming out over the next few months once the actual release of it for Windows Phone gets finalized. But yes, if you're a developer that's looking to sort of get into gaming and wants to, you know, play about with the Unity engines, particularly if you're in India and couldn't really justify the costs involved before, I think that's a great move on the part of the manufacturers of that particular developer environment.
Indeed, hopefully that will move over to Windows Phone as well. Also worth pointing out, if you're working for a company whose turnover is over $100,000, they do ask that you buy the full version, which pops in at about $1,500 US now as well. But nice to see that that's coming through. The more engines like that, the easier it is for porting, the more experience and tradable skills people have, and the better for not just for Windows Phone, but for BlackBerry, for the Firefox and handsets and all of that coming through as well, because Firefox can run them as web browsers and body, 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 blah. Right then.
I think Ewan's just mangled the Unity running on Firefox thing there, but yeah, you're right. It is kind of become something that's not quite a standard way of developing games, but certainly an awful lot of the games do seem to be based on that particular engine. There are others out there, and it's all part of the support in Windows Phone 8 for this native code has brought this in, and I can definitely confirm that this kind of free to create the games is also going to apply to the Windows Phone version of the Unity engine. Ewan, before we move off the game subject altogether, there has been the Xbox One announcement this week, all rather exciting. Calling it a gaming console is a bit misleading now because it does all sorts of other things, but given that this is the first new bit of Microsoft Xbox hardware for, I guess, 9 years it is now, great to see this come around, and it's becoming much more of an entertainment console. You're also getting the tie-in with both the Windows and Windows Phone UI in terms of the task being made even more obvious than it is in the current version of the Xbox. But is there any Windows Phone news we should be aware of here?
And not especially. They're obviously hinting at something. There was a brief cameo from Windows Phone as part of the remote control while they were watching one of the sports games with the picture-in-picture and information overlaid on top. But really, this launch was really to say, look, Xbox One is a home media console. You can stream video, you can watch TV and films. I'm assuming that you may have music in there as well, and it's all tied in to your Microsoft Live account. It was a positioning one. I do get the feeling this is put out there, so the intense speculation leading up to E3, where the Xbox One, the specs might have been flawed, or somebody might have done a spy picture. By announcing it and revealing it now, Microsoft have stayed in control of the story. They've positioned it as, we're taking over the living room like we always said we would, but most of the information about gaming has not been mentioned yet. We did see one or two titles come up there, but they're probably seeing some like 13 or 15 full-blown titles on that. There's no talk at all about how Xbox Live Mobile will actually tie in, and I suspect there will be something there. Microsoft unified on their tablets and their desktops and Windows 8. We've already seen crossover stuff happening with Windows Phone 8. They're bringing everything in under the same sort of cloud services, so I would assume that there's going to be quite a bit of connectivity between Xbox One and your Windows Phone. But it's Microsoft's story to tell. By announcing it now, they've kept themselves in control of that story, and we will need to revisit this again in June, I think.
Okay, so we'll make sure we keep you up to date with that. But as Ewan says there, we've already got smart glass on Windows Phone 8 and on the Xbox, the current generation, that sort of connectivity, that third screening or contextual information, whichever way you want to describe it. I suspect we're going to see that in a bit more detail, and maybe the next generation. But as Ewan says, nothing to report on directly yet. Before we finish this podcast, Ewan, should we just do one more thing on Ecosystem Wars, which has come up this week? We talked about the release of the new YouTube application in the previous week, but then there was a bit of news on that this week, wasn't there?
So was, yes. So let me get this right, because this happened when I was there. Microsoft just went ahead and released a brand new YouTube client that did everything that every Windows Phone user wanted it to do, as well as the ability to download videos, but not carry any advertising from Google.
That's right.
This was right after Google had went to their I.O. conference and said, we're very open, we want everybody to work with us.
Yes, that's right. I mean, there's any number of ways you can spin this. But actually, what happened after the release of this app, and you can't help avoid the feeling that Microsoft was kind of precipitating this action by releasing it in the first place.
No.
They got a letter from Google saying, we don't like that very much. We demand that you immediately withdraw the application and also press the magic button that makes all the existing downloads disappear on devices. Mm-hmm. And as you say, the two main objections were being able to download and view videos offline and also access to some restricted mm-hmm. videos. But actually, I think the main point was around advertising, and Google made great play of saying it's affecting our content creators and it's horrible. You're taking money away from them.
At which point, I believe Microsoft said, we'd love to add in adverts. Give us the API.
That's exactly right. And as I said, it's a complex issue. We've got the details on the site, so if you want to go, you can read them there. But essentially what it boils down to is the fact that it's not possible to create a YouTube full native client on Windows Phone that's fully compliant with YouTube's terms of services, because the API availability just isn't there. There isn't an equality of API features and feature sets between the mobile platforms. Now, you could say that Google's perfectly entitled to do that, and I think in a legal sense that is absolutely true. But not surprisingly, quite a few consumers are sort of going, Microsoft is trying to do the right thing here, Google is the one that's causing trouble. As I say, from a purely legal point of view, I sympathize with Google, but I think Microsoft has, you know, played this one smarter than Google has. And as I said earlier, I suspect this is a very deliberate strategy on their part. They have since updated the application. They've removed the ability to download videos for offline use. I think that was probably one of the more problematic parts of the application in terms
It's almost like they put it in as a lightning rod, isn't it?
Well, possibly. I don't know how much you can ascribe Machiavellian tendencies to Microsoft. I'm sure there's going to be loads of people shouting, saying,
Loads of them.
But I think sometimes people give Microsoft and other big companies too much credit for being deliberately evil and deliberately setting out these strategies. No doubt there's something there, but anyway, this one is yet to resolve itself. So there's already been the update. I'm not sure what's going to quite happen here. I mean, I think the likely scenario is they'll manage to sit together and make nice or something. But it may be a while in coming, but really it's just kind of the fallout from this ongoing ecosystem war. And in one sense, I find it interesting because it's quite clear that Google does see Microsoft as a major threat in mobile. You talk to a lot of people, a lot of consumers, you know, that you dismiss Windows saying, you know, because quite rightly, it hasn't actually sold that many devices, you know, yet to do more than 10 million in a quarter, probably about 3% market share, maybe edging up towards 5% now. But all in all, you know, it is very definitely in third place by a long, long way. But it's pretty obvious that Google actually sees Windows Phone and Microsoft's efforts in mobile as a bigger threat than I think the general public does. And that's perhaps because it's, you know, more far-sighted. It realizes that in some ways Windows Phone is a more direct competitor than something like iOS. And that's because it's competing not just on the high-end devices like the iPhone. You know, the iPhone does get into the mid-tier, particularly if you start counting the older devices being sold in retail still. But in terms of the low end, really, it's only Windows Phone that's, you know, making a serious play at the moment with devices that we were talking about earlier, the 520, the 620, 720, the HTC A-Test, and some of the ones coming out of the Chinese manufacturers as well. So I think it's all playing into that. And so this, you know, YouTube debate is really part of a wider issue.
Indeed, yes. And just to finish off, Rafe, have we got an app of the week?
I've got an app of the week I can talk about, yes.
Yeah, because I want to highlight WordPress again. I'm pretty sure that we'd have done this before.
Twice
an app
already,
of the week.
Yes.
Twice already, three times already. Okay, well, I go for something else then. Okay, right then. How about the alarm clock? I've never done the alarm clock as an app of the week yet.
Okay, how about that?
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, I've been using the alarm clock to wake myself up. All this week, it's been really useful.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about Turbo Racing League. It's actually a tie-in to the upcoming animated film Turbo from DreamWorks. Essentially, it's a racing game, but with snails, and so all the features you'd expect, being able to upgrade your shells, do paint jobs, put spoilers on the back. There's the usual leaderboards, and one of the interesting elements here is for the next 8 weeks, there's a chance to win cash prizes. So check that out. It's a free download from the Windows Phone Store.
Actually, I'm going to put a plea out for App of the Week. That's what I'm going to do. Because of all the changes that are happening to Flickr at the moment, we've still got a very old Flickr application on Windows Phone. And I think, you know, given the changes made to Flickr, how it's much more glorious, much more colorful, much more useful, especially in the iPhone application, I think it's time that the Flickr app got updated on Windows Phone.
Okay, there we go. So if you're a third-party developer looking for an application inspiration, you want to do something about the Flickr app. See if you can improve on the official one.
Right then, that's it. I believe that's the Inside Podcast for the week. It's number 64, and we've managed to do it in under 3 hours, so yay, go us. Thanks to Ray Blanford for keeping it under 3 hours.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Indeed. Thanks to me for managing to do more than 3 minutes and getting up to the half-hour mark. Thank you, me. Thank you all out there for listening as well. Your comments are always appreciated and welcome. Facebook, Twitter, Hurdle Panel, the main website as well, which you do not have to say www.allaboutwindowsphone.com to get to the website. That's right, yeah? That's what we're doing now? Right. Good, that's what we're doing now. Catch you in the next podcast. Ta-ra for now.